It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And those of you who are consistent long-term listeners, A, thank you for always being there. And two, you already know Joey. Joey and Adam are partners in Striveth Wealth Partners. And the P stands for Joey and Adam, sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Well, the main thing is the market's down, which means I'm tagged in. You know how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Joey's been on a couple, three times, something like that. And we're Adam being so busy because this week he isn't America's favorite soccer dad. He's America's favorite pre-college dad.
That's right.
So they're going over to FSU today. And there's a lot of that that's going to go on over the summer. And we used to have to scramble around and hope somebody would say, sure, I'd love to do the show with you. But Joey's kind of the natural stand-in now, and it sure makes my life a lot easier. And I think it's good for him, too, because just in general, you know, thinking on your feet is a wonderful thing. And it's just like being in the office, because you never know what somebody's going to ask, except there's a lot of people, and you aren't directing the topic. I've said for a long time, all those people who do their financial shows and record them, they're afraid of the public, maybe, or they just don't want to put in the time and work. I don't know. But the whole thing about talk radio being so much fun and being so popular for so long is because of the instant nature of it. You can pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will talk directly to us immediately. And I find it as much fun on my end as a lot of people do on their end, and I'm sure Adam is like that too, and Joey as well. It's just more fun when people call and talk about what they want to talk about. So this week, I'll summarize what went on this week real quickly, and then Joey will do the market wrap. The first and most important thing that happened this week was that Nick Rivers died. And for those of you who don't know the movie Top Secret, he had another name called Val Kilmer. But Nick Rivers was my favorite of his roles. He was a funny and talented guy, and what a devastating way to have to go for a guy who's a singer. Yeah. Very bad. But I digress. You know, I'm kidding. There were a lot of things that went on this week that were absolutely horrible. I would like to say, nothing to see here, just move along. But I don't think the audience would be very happy if I did that.
No, so there's probably
take it away.
Some layers to peel.
Yeah.
All right, so this week was the long-awaited Liberation Day. President Trump, Wednesday afternoon, 4 o'clock in the Rose Garden, gave all of us the information that we've been dying to know about, which is, what does the tariff regime look like? President Trump ran on plans to unveil tariffs around the nation or around the world, with the storyline being that trade has not been fair to the United States for quite some time, and that tariffs were going to be a tool to use that were going to help us set that right. So in the wake of the announcements, the S&P declined nearly 5% on Thursday. And I think that really just comes down to the market did not necessarily anticipate the magnitude of the tariffs that were rolled out. On Friday morning, China announced a retaliatory 34% tariff as a response. This led to a greater investor flight from risk, leading to a 6% decline in the S&P on Friday. And just to put this in context, since the five-day trading period began in 1952, there have only been three other periods where the benchmark index of U.S. stocks declined by double-digit percentages across just two trading sessions. That was October 1987, Black Monday.
I remember it well.
November 2008.
I remember it well.
And then March 2020, COVID-19.
I remember it well.
Yeah. So closing out this week, the S&P and NASDAQ were both back down near their lows in last spring's pullback. So, you know, for investors that live week to week, it feels horrible. But in the context of things, we were lower than this last spring and before. You know, that's just where we were. So, and it's been an amazing couple of years leading up to this. It doesn't feel good today, but in the context of things, it's not so terrible.
On April 19th last year, the S&P was under 5,000.
Right.
Today, the S&P is over 5,000. We're profitable for that 11 and a half months.
Yeah.
Will it last? I have no idea.
Right.
But this is not the end of the world by any means.
It's not. The VIX volatility index soared to 40 in afternoon trading yesterday. nearing its highest close since, again, April of 2020. Thursday, small cap benchmark passed the threshold for a bear market decline of 20% or more, followed by the NASDAQ on Friday. So we have the NASDAQ and small caps now in bear market territory. Since Liberation Day, Wednesday, the S&P index is down 9.41%, and the equal weight index is down 9.27%, suggesting this is hitting all elements of the S&P and the market as a whole. It's not just confined to the Mag 7 like we've seen prior to Liberation Day.
Yeah, it was a take no prisoners last 2 days, that's for sure.
Right. It was a systematic problem, not an unsystematic problem. And you might not even have noticed this in the wake of all the focus on tariffs, but yesterday a positive jobs report, 228,000 new jobs in the month of March came out. But, you know, yesterday was the worst of the 2 days, so you might not have even noticed.
Sad truth, unfortunately. There's so much good going on. In fact, just this morning at 2:30 or so, one of the most significant things happened that will ever come out of the Washington, D.C. area when the Senate agreed to one big, beautiful bill, as President Trump likes to refer to these things, and it was his choice to do so. And they have now made their plan by having the Senate approve it in the manner they did, which I will explain. It will now go to the House, and they will approve a very similar thing. Then they go to conference committee, and they budget the details back and forth. So I can't tell you what's going to be in it. But they did something that I suggested. In fact, I think I suggested it last time Joey was on the show with me. I was talking about if you pay the same taxes tomorrow that you paid today, did you get a tax cut or a tax hike or nothing? And same if you pay lower, did you get a cut, a hike, or nothing? And what they did, and this had been proposed, and I think Lindsey Graham is probably responsible for getting it through, and you all have been listening to me a long time, know that Lindsey and I are on shaky ground most of the time. I honestly think he is, when he's good, he's really, really good. And when he's bad, he is so useless. In fact, he's worse than useless when he's bad.
Does Lindsey know he's on shaky ground with you?
Yeah. And he's the one that came up with the obvious thing that I had been talking about for a while. In fact, if you go read my last few blog posts, I talk about this. Why not in preparing their CBO budgeting estimates, the Democrats were trying to charge them with a $4.5 trillion tax cut for the wealthy if they let the tax rates from 2018 expire. Now, I don't think you can do a tax cut or a tax hike or anything by not doing anything. So he said, this is the way it is. This is current law, so we're starting at zero, and that is the exact right thing. So what we've got now, and it has to be negotiated and signed and all that, so don't get out over my skis here, but it is now going to be permanent, these tax rates. That counts. We'll be right back after a quick break. Got trivia and everything else. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And as usual, we do have a trivia question, which I will bring up after I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. There is a well-kept secret inside the Beltway that is not a well-kept secret outside the Beltway, and that says, when you cut tax rates, you get more revenue. And for some reason, that is 100% political, since the numbers are out there for everybody to read. D.C. can't handle that. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but I don't need to get into that because you all know why. Let's revisit what happened this morning when TCJA rates got made permanent. The corporate tax rate prior to TCJA, in other words, it was in effect in 2017, was 35%. Effective with TCJA, in other words, 1/1/18, that got cut to 21%. So 35 to 21, and of course that was going to bust the budget and just ruin everything, according to the people inside the Beltway. And we all knew better. What actually happened during the the life of TCJA rates so far, meaning 2018 to now, what was the percentage increase in corporate tax revenue as a whole? And it is bigger than zero. I already told you, you get more revenue when you lower tax rates. So I'm not going to put a bracket around it just yet. So if somebody cares to call in and bracket the thing, I would be very appreciative. All right, back to the mostly ugly market.
So we've got, since Inauguration Day, which is really year-to-date, mostly, S&P 500 down 14%, Dow is down 10%, NASDAQ's down 17.89%, mid-cap's down 18%, and the Russell 1000 is down 14.71%. If we look around the world, we can see that we are feeling most of the pain, at least so far this year. We've got other countries on the ride with us. Australia is down 12.83%, Canada down 5%, Italy down 3%. But if we look at the all-world ex-U.S. index, they're down only about 3% versus our 14+. And treasuries have been kind of the place to be year-to-date. It's good to see bond markets doing their job again. In 2022, that wasn't the case. We've had many instances where the old 60-40 portfolio just kind of went up and down together, and that didn't feel so good. And then if we look at oil, oil's down about 18%. Natural gas is up, and so is gold. So gold has been doing its age-old job as well, which hasn't always been the case.
Until yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday it looked. Interestingly, yesterday, gold didn't do its job, and Bitcoin kicked it out right of the way and did its job as gold.
You know, one of the things that I was talking about when all the discussion was happening about the tariffs, I said, it's not going to translate one-to-one. The numbers you hear are not going to be what you see on the shelves next time you go shopping. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is because the dollar reacts very sharply to things like this. So the dollar is on a free fall right at the moment, and it's going to help anybody who's an exporter, and it's going to hurt anybody who's an importer. So you're going to find some things that are actually much better, and another one of them, is what happened, as you said, to oil. It takes a few weeks to go from oil priced in the ground through the extraction, refining, distribution, and put it in your gas pump. It takes a while. But that kind of a drop down to 61-ish, I think, per barrel, you're going to see that translate very soon into the pump. And that is going to cause a dramatic decrease in your out-of-pocket costs, and it will then trickle right back into the inflation numbers that everybody is so concerned about. So when this thing starts and the good news starts back again, all I can say is you better be on board, because if you wait, you are going to be very sorry.
Well, to your point about a weakening dollar impacting importers more than exporters, consumer discretionary is by far, along with semiconductors, the place that has taken the biggest hit. And of the Russell 1000, the seven weakest stocks of this week, based on this news, are RH, VF Corp, Five and Below, Wayfair, Kohl's, Capri, SharkNinja, and Gap, all of which have models that are incredibly reliant on importing their products.
Exactly. Another interesting point along the way, after Trump announced these tariffs and the world was tearing their hair out, everybody knew, and it has been discussed widely, that the art of the deal has just begun. These are not punitive tariffs for the reason of generating money. They're punitive because people have been ripping off this country for too long, and he wants it to stop. Among the first, if not the first, of the foreign leaders to call and offer, no tariffs, can we talk? And Trump says, yes, we can. Thank you very much for the call. It was the leader of the communist dictatorship in Vietnam. And I just got a kick out of that like crazy. Now, Trump didn't accept it on the phone call, and I wouldn't either. That's not the art of the deal. I've been thinking about this. The art of the deal is saying, thanks for the call. Of course, our people and your people will sit down, we'll hammer out the details. Because, of course, our tariffs are going to differ from their tariffs, and let's see what the offsets are. And if anybody reneges on anything, because frankly, you don't really negotiate with a dictator unless there's a crowd around and somebody's the gatekeeper. But I think it was hysterical that a communist was the first one to say, I think maybe we need help.
Well, I'm sure Nike was like, oh my gosh, thank God. Because they had just, over the last few years, the last administration wanted them to move out of China into Vietnam.
Yeah.
This one comes in and says, get out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
They're like, come on. And
funny, huh?
Yeah.
And you know, given our history with Vietnam, it's even funnier. But you just never know if you stick around. But the point is, this is not something you can just read on a piece of paper, react negatively, and expect to be right. Because it's going to be a process. Another thing that caught my eye that I thought was so weird, 4 Republican senators voted no. They didn't actually vote on that package. They voted to not have Canada be tariffed. And Canada wasn't part of this deal. Canada and Mexico were accepted from this deal because we already have the U.S. what's it called? USMCA. So those negotiations are totally separate. He's not going to tariff Canada, but they made darn sure he wouldn't by passing a stupid, unneeded law. I was talking to Joey just before we got on air, and this is just such a graphic representation of why nothing ever gets done in D.C. Look what you have to put up with to do anything. The media, the worst they could possibly be. The other political party. Members of your own political party. You're castigated for doing anything. And yet you take every single one of those people and you say, this country's on a dead-end collision path, aren't they? And they'll all agree with you. Well, then let's change it. Well, yeah, but you got to change it with a scalpel. You know, maybe if we cut out a $2 million project in some red state, it would all get better. You can't do that. We've got it's so big. Talking about another thing, Angela Walker was talking to us, and she had been talking about us. Thanks for the plug, Angela. We really appreciate it. And we will get to talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But I got to figure out exactly how I want to get to where I'm going here. If you had John Beresford Tipton, is another anachronism. For those of us my age, we will remember the show The Millionaire. A very wealthy man used to find someone who was in dire straits and give them $1 million. And to this day, that was 60 years ago maybe that was on, to this day, $1 million is still kind of the big deal. In fact, Angela was talking about that too. Everybody would like to be a millionaire. That's $1 million. The problem we have is not even millions, it's not even billions. A billion is 1,000 millions. So we could take a small town like I grew up in and give everybody $1 million and be a drop in the bucket. But a trillion is 1,000 billion. In other words, look at a trillion, it's 1 million millionaires. That is a lot of money. And we spend 2 of those over what we take in every single year. A scalpel is not going to touch it, people. It is just not even close. So we had to do a Doge-type thing, which, by the way, was conceived by some guy named Schumer back in the 90s. And the tariff thing was touted by some woman named Pelosi, I think, back in the 90s. And Fox found both of the films and played them. And it is hysterical listening to them.
To be fair on the tariffs, though, I mean, you know, we can talk about the concepts of different things, but execution is where the gravy is. And if we're looking at, I think one of the things that shocked the market, if we're just going to talk objectively about how the market's reaction was, the market has known that tariffs are coming. Everybody knew Trump was going to deliver on the promise.
Yep.
The thing that differed was the magnitude of the tariffs and the calculation method,
yep,
which is probably worth sharing. Initially, you know, they've been positioned as reciprocal tariffs. I think everybody likes in concept reciprocal tariffs. The idea that if someone's doing something bad to us, we need to show them what it feels like so that we can get to the negotiating table. Well, what ended up happening on Wednesday was we learned that the tariffs were based on trade deficits, which isn't necessarily what the market was expecting. And so I do think people are generally on board with tariffs, but the execution method, I think, shocked people. And maybe that's where some of the
conflict. And actually, you can make that argument from both sides, too, because some of the tariffs that we put on are only half of what those people are charging us. Like, I don't want to use Canada very often because it is a separate agreement, but Canada charges our farmers about a 290% tariff on things like butter and cream. And there's no way Trump will do that to anybody. And you might say, especially Canada, even though they're not friendly with us right now, but they are long run. So much more discussion to come. I'd like somebody to chime in, but we got to pay a couple bills, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I am going to the phones momentarily, but I did want to remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255, and that the trivia question is out there. Since the corporate tax rate was cut dramatically in 2018, what percentage have the corporate tax collections risen? And now we'll go to... Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
What's happening?
How are you?
Wonderful.
You? Good morning.
What's cooking?
I wanted to ask your opinion, what you think of fair tax.
I have been the biggest supporter of the fair tax since Neil Bortz, probably, since the mid-90s. How about you?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I guess because it makes so much sense, they won't do it.
I like the way you put that. It is the answer to virtually every question, and it has one serious flaw. And that flaw is it is way too easy to demagogue it, if you understand. The other side has always said he wants to raise the sales tax by 33% or 21% or whatever the hell they use on it. And people believe that. And it's just so untrue. But you have to read the book to really understand it, I think. I've read it a minimum of 3 times. In fact, my mother, who was in her, I would say, 60s by then, when I started talking about it, she was really skeptical. So I sent her the book, and she sat down and read it and called me back and said, "Wow. This is great." And she was on board ever since that. But then Bortz retired and Lindner left the Congress, and the two best mouthpieces for the thing in the southeastern U.S. area both kind of went silent right then, and it sort of died. Sort of. But there are a lot of sponsors right now, including J.D. Vance, by the way.
What do you think of, you know, if anyone, I don't understand why President Trump never speaks of it, or I've never heard him speak of it.
He has spoken of consumption taxes, but it's way too much detail for him to get into when he's up to his rear end and alligators on every other front. And I don't think it's any more complicated than that.
Okay, because I thought if anyone could push something like that, because he's so popular, and he can, you know, with the bully pulpit, he can reach so many people. And a lot of times, people have never heard of it. They have no idea what it is.
That is correct.
I've spoken to young people especially, and they're like, "What is it?" They've never heard of it.
Right.
They have no idea what it's about, how it works, nothing. My husband got me into it, and we have given some books to people, you know, to read, just to educate. And I think that's the big thing.
It is, absolutely.
Is educating people about it.
Kind of parallel story to what's going on right now, I think, in D.C. with the tariffs. They're so easy to demonize also. And nobody really knows. Joey and I were just talking in the last break about this thing that just happened with the tariffs is going to be a business school case study down the line. It's either going to be because it was fabulous or because it stunk up the place, and I'm not going to be the one to guess right at the moment. I know I lean positive, as a lot of people do, but we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, we sure will.
Well, there's historically, if people were taught in the schools and educated, they know that's how the country did things long ago.
Once the schools are freed from the control of the national education people, unions and departments and so on, perhaps there'll be room for that. In fact, DeSantis only started not very long ago at all, the finance being taught again in public schools in Florida. That's a good start.
Well, you know, I taught school in Virginia, in the Richmond, Virginia area. In 1990-92, they had a big push on the history they did with Colonial Williamsburg and Jamestown, and a big push on economics where they were giving teachers a summer thing at UVA where they were teaching economics and showing you how to do it elementary and up and providing lessons. And it was a big push then for that.
Yeah, and it just kind of faded away, and it's a shame. But the movement is still alive. You can go to fairtax.org, and there are people in our area, particularly in St. Augustine, that are very active in it. So if anybody wants to know more, the first thing I do would be go to the website and get a little picture of it. Then you can go to Amazon or any place like that, or probably your public library, and read the Fair Tax book. That's all it's called. It's by Lindner and Bortz. And it will tell you everything you need to know, and I promise you, you'll be shocked.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my husband just told me we've got 7 copies of Fair Tax. We have like a lending library for it.
Good. Well, if you want to donate one, we'll give it out for a trivia question someday.
Want to donate one so he can give? He'll do like a trivia question.
Yeah.
And give it to the winner.
Yeah, we could.
You like to do that? Yeah.
Great.
I guess all we need to know is how to get it to you.
Yeah, well, what part of the world do you live in?
We're in Duval County, somewhere around where the Chaffee Road area, near the library, regional library, which is very nice.
Okay. Well, you can look us up. Look up Strivus, Strivus, Wealth, on the internet, and our mailing address is there. We're in Jacksonville Beach. And if you want to send one over, we make sure you include your names and we'll give you credit. I'll give Paul Lloyd a week off.
I'd love to. If you had all the money in the world, how would you go about getting things out there about Fair Tax to the mass?
If I had all the money in the world, I'd give everybody in grade school and high school and middle school a copy of it, and then I'd send another one to each of their parents, and I'd force them at gunpoint to read it. How's that? No, there'd be an inducement, but it wouldn't happen.
I was disappointed when Bortz left because he talked about it a lot.
A lot. So,
and being national, he could get that information out there.
Yeah. Like I said, fairtax.org will get you there, but also look around at follow the lead there to St. Augustine. This guy named Paul Livingston, who's, I think, still the most active in it. We do have a good organization around here because we were in on the Bortz and Lindner thing just due to proximity and through some of the radio stations around town. So I would really love it if you do that, and we appreciate it very much, and you get full credit. Meanwhile, speaking of trivia questions, you want to take a shot at this one? How much revenue went up?
Repeat what it is, because my husband is better at that kind of thing.
Okay. Shoot. How much did corporate tax revenue increase when the rates were dropped in 2018?
Give me a number. 35.
Way too low.
Oh, way too low. Yep. I was going to say, for me, I was going to say 60.
Well, I'll tell you what, in the interest of time, you're way too low. How's that?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a good news. I needed a good news question on a bad news day.
Well, I think things will turn around. I have a lot of faith in Trump, what he's trying to do.
Yep.
And it seems like every time he does something, they demonize him for it.
That's it.
It all turns out.
Yeah. Hopefully time will prove us all right, you people like us.
I hope so.
I appreciate your call. You have a great weekend. It's beautiful out there. Enjoy it.
Yes, sir. You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, that's a topic. We've done whole shows on fair tax, but you know, with the enthusiasm kind of dying for it, I'd like to get it ramped up again, but it's very difficult to get people to pay attention. Karen's exactly right. Anyway, Joy, you had a little bit more.
Yeah, well, she mentioned that, you know, she thinks things will turn around, and the data historically suggests that she's probably right. So let's dig into that. I'm going to cover inflation, and then we'll go through kind of what has happened historically when we get to moments like this.
Okay.
So currently, the inflation rate at the .gov version of it is 2.8%. Another tool that we like to use in the office, it's called Truflation, TRUflation.com, mm-hmm. suggests that inflation is actually considerably lower, around 1.4%, which would be healthy and below.
I checked in on them this morning, and I was very, very taken aback by how low it has just recently gotten.
Now, disclaimer, there's updates pretty frequently, but they have access to more real-time data, and they're not afraid to publish it. And
with the drop in oil prices, when you get to the sales at gas stations, you know the naysayers how going to treat this. They're going to say, well, sales at gas stations are way down. Yeah, no kidding.
Right. And so now that the Fed keeps a rate of 2%, and so now that we're below that rate, assuming that we don't see transitory inflation, which is very possible with the tariffs, if we don't see transitory inflation, then that kind of gives the Fed what they need to feel a little bit more comfortable cutting rates.
Oh, I'm all in the camp of at least two cuts this year.
Yeah, I think.
I want to see what's going on.
If inflation can hang out here, then I think that is much more likely.
Yeah, in and of itself, a tariff is not an inflationary thing. Inflation is a continual rising of prices. It might bump the price level up for a while. When the tariff goes away, it bumps back down. But it doesn't create a cycle of inflation. And I think that's something people ought to be more aware of also. I know it's tough out there with the inflation we've already had, but it's going to get a little better. All right, one more segment. We're going to talk about some more fun things as soon as we get back. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I want to remind everybody once again, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is there. By what percentage did corporate tax receipts increase since the rate was dropped in 2018? And we know that 50% is too low. I have a couple of quick things, and then I'm going to turn it back to Joey for the duration, probably. He's got some very interesting things going on. It was in 1973, in the month of April, when the first cellular phone call was made. On that phone, you had 20 minutes of talk time. It took 10 hours to charge, and it cost over $4,000 in today's dollars. We've come a long way, baby. A long way. And the other one is the Ford Motor Company announced this week that all you have to do is walk in the door of a dealership and they're going to give everybody employee pricing on new Fords. And I would imagine that'll be coupled with a pretty enticing package of financing, too. I think, personally, and Ford is a very high domestic content car anyway, but I think, personally, that is one of the smartest things I've ever seen a Fortune 500 company do. That's my opinion. I hope it works. If you're in the market for that kind of thing, you know a good place to start.
And if Ford is listening, you know, we're happy to accept the shout-out dollars. Just let us know. I said if Ford is listening, we're happy to accept shout-out dollars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Joey, let's talk about a few things like inflation.
Okay, so we covered inflation. We're going on to what has historically happened when we are in a market like this, right? It's easy. All the headlines are dark. If you listen to any radio show, people are either saying it's going to be amazing or it's going to be horrible. You're not getting a whole lot of in between. Let's just look at the data and pull the emotions and the politics out of it. Historically, when benchmarks have entered bear markets like this, long-term performance has been considerably stronger than usual in the periods that follow. And if you think about this, this makes sense. If we've been to an all-time high before and we see a big decline in the market, it's easier for the market to get to some place that it's been before. It's harder for it to reach a new all-time high. But it's typically the case that people jump on the train when it's already, you know, when it's every day we're in a new all-time high. That's when all the headlines are popular. Yep. But there's just less runway to go up at that point. You're more likely to see a bear market.
It's,
so
it's like when we talk about growth companies. It's one thing to double the size of your company when you're doing $100 million a year in sales. It's another thing when you're Microsoft.
Right.
It's maturity and size. And this is partly a numerical game. You're absolutely correct.
So historically, that's what it says. But the challenge is we just don't know, are we at the bottom now at close on Friday? Or is there a long way to go? We just don't know where the bottom is. There are 14 periods since the inception of the NASDAQ in which it saw a 5 or more days in a row, 2% decline.
Huh.
And in the time that follows these steep declines, the average one-month return after a decline was 2.5% versus 1% after any other period. The average three-month return was 3.7% versus 3. The average six-month return was 12.9 versus 6. And the average 12-month was 20.7 versus 12.8. And what do you draw from that? It's just that if the market has gone down, there's more room to go up, whether you're looking at a month, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. We just don't know if that uptrend starts today or if we're 6 or 12 months away from that.
The market had a pre-COVID-19 peak on March 14th, 2000. And in the next 19 days, the index fell 29%. On June 1st, it surpassed its prior high again, 79 days total. And then 1 year from the March 14th, the index had posted 27% yearly gain. And then it did it again.
Yeah.
And then it had a bad time. And then it had a good time. Gee, sounds like a stock market.
I'm seeing a pattern.
Yeah, there's something going on here.
Yeah, and so the conclusion, I think, you know, we can't help but be financial planners about it, is that history suggests steep declines like this create good buying opportunities, so long as you're an investor with a strong stomach and you understand what you're doing. And I think that the idea is just you just don't want to put money in there that you're going to spend in the next 7 years or so.
I mean, and
you got to give it time.
From the day I first got into this business, the first thing I learned was exactly that. If you don't have at least 5 years to let your money sit in the market, it shouldn't be there.
Right.
So what are you doing in there? If you're not doing the five-year or better plan, then you're day trading. I don't care if you keep it, if you only got 2 years. You're day trading, essentially. You're accepting maximum market risk for the minimum probable return.
Yeah, I accept that because you're forced to time when you pull the money. It's not a thought. If you go back in history and you look at a 15-year rolling return period, you cannot find one where the S&P was not higher 15 years later.
Right.
But if you go to 10 years, there's a very slim chance you have less money. It's really just one period in the 30s. And if you go back to a five-year, you know, you start to find a lot more periods may not have more.
There are a lot of hiccups in the five-year range. And we have seen a 10-year period where the S&P gained nothing. But that was the index, and it didn't include the dividends along the way either. So you got to be careful that you're comparing apples to apples on some of this.
Right.
We want to talk a little bit more about taxation here, but I want to throw one thing in. My erudite research department has just informed me that Stellantis is doing employee pricing until the end of this month. And since this is only the 5th, that means you got a lot of time to buy a Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, something like that in that amount of time. And by the way, since the announcement, they shut down two factories, one in Canada and one in Mexico. Isn't that a shame? I'll give you a hint. No, it's not a shame, in my opinion. I'm always able to be argued with. How about some tax loss harvesting? I think we have some opportunity here, don't you?
Yeah, I think for the thoughtful, you know, tax planning investor, and really this is something that you can look at yourself. I think if you have a complicated tax picture, it gets harder, of course. But in a brokerage account, you know, people think of downtimes as just you just got to sit and wait. And there are opportunities to harvest some losses and eventually carry those against your ordinary income. What you're allowed to do is if you have a holding that's, let's say you have a holding that's down 10,000 from where you bought it, you can harvest 3,000 of that loss, right? Sell those shares. You make that a real tax event of negative $3,000. you're actually allowed to carry that loss against your ordinary income rate on your tax return. You can't go above 3,000, but you can carry 3,000. And what that does is you're selling something that basically would otherwise be taxed or credited at a 15% rate, 20% if you're in the high income on the investment side. But you can carry it against up to a potentially 37% ordinary income tax rate. So that's something that we look at every year for people is if there's holdings that are down and this is a high income person, we're going to harvest those losses because we can arbitrage for some tax savings.
Yeah. Good morning, Bosco.
Hey, y'all.
What's happening?
I wanted to throw a bracket in on you. I'm going to say 85%.
That's a wonderful guess. Way too low.
Too low.
Told you this was a good news question.
Holy moly.
I know. You know, that's why it would have been catastrophic if some of the idiot Republicans had gotten their way and traded something at the consumer level for something at the corporate level. That 15% corporate rate is critical to the overall plan, and it's going to get better and better now that we started from a baseline of zero, meaning the way it is.
Fabulous.
Yep.
I'm going to let you go.
Love it. Okay. Always appreciate the call.
Have a great program. Thank you.
Another thing on the tax loss harvesting, if we're talking about an individual stock or an ETF or something, you do have to always watch out for the loss or the wash sale rules. You want to run over those a bit?
Yeah, it's basically if you sell a position and buy in within 30 days, then you can't just realize the loss and then continue holding the position. They want you to have a 30-day period between when you sold and when you bought to prove that you were truly out of the position and not just doing some sort of tax arbitrage. And the IRS has deemed that 30 days is long enough for enough market activity to occur that you've taken enough risk to be a real investor for that.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to sit on the sidelines with your proceeds either.
No. So what you're actually seeing right now, I heard this week, people are going just down the risk chain, right? So if they've been holding the Mag 7 stocks, you know, those have taken a beating, but maybe they didn't sell until this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And what they're doing is they're not sitting on the sidelines. They're moving out of individual positions and into indexes. Mm-hmm. And what that suggests to me is that investors feel more comfortable about their ability to stomach and wait for the whole market to recover than they do individual stocks, which have their own factors.
Yeah, the IRS lingo is substantially similar. Now, you can't just arbitrarily say, well, this is or isn't, but you know one thing. If you're going from an individual stock to an index share, and it's not substantially similar.
No, and a lot of times you can go from one kind of ETF to a similar but not too similar one.
Right.
It's a little gray, but it's not like they publish a perfect list.
But what if you had the SPY, for instance, the S&P 500, and you wanted to go maybe to the subset of value stocks in the S&P or the subset of growth stocks in the S&P? I don't think you would be flagged for having a wash sale. Another thing, when they say you can't buy it back for that period of time, they mean anywhere.
Right.
Don't think you can do this in your taxable account and go over to your 401k and buy the same thing. They learned that one a long time ago, and they'll look for it. And if you have his and hers accounts, their accounts, don't try it because there's a really, really good chance you're going to get caught if you try to break that rule. But not doing it is a shame on you moment. Harvest some losses. You can use them forever and ever. The best thing of all, something a lot of people don't understand, you can take a long-term capital loss and apply it to a short-term capital gain and wash it right out.
That's right.
And that's what Joy was saying with the difference in the interest rates. All right. Well, I'm sorry we ran out of time. It was a lot of fun, but we'll see you next week, same time, same place, and hopefully with better news. Have a good one. This is the Ben Weef.